Today on Maine Calling, traumatic brain injury, or TBI. There are all kinds of things we can do for better health. Exercise, sleep more, eat vegetables, drink water. But one of the most important is often left off of that list, and that is try not to fall. Falls are a leading cause of traumatic brain injury. And worldwide, brain injury is the leading cause of death and disability. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in with brain injury survivor, television anchor Kim Block, about the challenges she has faced after a fall on the ice in 2019. And we'll learn about current treatments for brain injury patients and new ways of thinking about TBI diagnosis. Has a brain injury affected your life or a loved one's? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Brain injuries are often swift and life-altering. They can be caused by playing sports, car accidents, falls, and many everyday activities. Today, we're going to learn what's known about traumatic brain injuries, and we're going to talk about causes, treatments, and support for those affected. My guests today are Kim Block, who is a brain injury survivor and advocate. You likely know her as longtime broadcast journalist at WGME Television. And Alyssa Fabianic, who is a doctor of occupational therapy and director of the brain injury program at River Ridge Center and outpatient neurorehabilitation. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you concerned about yourself or someone you know who has had a fall or a concussion? What questions do you have about brain injury support or recovery? You can send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us. And Kim, I can't believe it's been 7 years since you slipped and fell on the ice. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Jen. So nice to talk with you again. I can't either. January of 2019. I'll trust your math. I'm sort of day by day as my life has been for the last few years. But I'm doing better. You and I have talked before, and it's always nice to share that there's progress in this kind of long road to recovery. Not that the expectation is ever complete recovery in my case, but I do find myself, you know, able to challenge myself a little bit more. I definitely have taken on some projects that I might have been afraid to do a number of years ago. But day-to-day life is still kind of my own occupational therapy, if you can understand that. But I am doing better and am grateful for every day.
You are speaking to me on Zoom and you're wearing some shaded glasses. Do those help you?
Yes. Yes, I wear these 98% of the time. I tried to wear some clear ones just so maybe you would not notice, but I've grown used to these and they are very helpful. One of the things that I still struggle with a great deal is what's called photophobia, which is a sensitivity to light. And it can be very painful to stare at bright lights, kind of instant migraines. And in addition to that, it can make me you know, feel some vertigo and dizziness. These also have prisms in the middle of them, Jen. And I have two pairs. I normally wear progressives, but as my neuro-optometrist has explained to me, that the brain doesn't really like progressives because you're looking through three different lenses at once. And so he suggested that I go to single vision lenses near and far. So I'm constantly changing them back and forth all day. But between the shading and between that aspect and the prisms in them, they are really one of the helpful tools that I use.
Kim, you know, one of the things about you being you is that when this happened, you did not climb into a private little cave, but instead you have chosen to speak out about your experience and your challenges. Why?
Well, Jen, I spent, you know, 40 years at WGME working alongside you as a colleague in the market for many years in a different station, of course. But and my main focus all of that time was really medical and health issues in addition to my anchoring. And I have seen firsthand how helpful it can be for people to share their stories. It to bring a face and a voice to an injury or a disease or an accident, anything that's happened, can be so powerful because people can see themselves in that person's story. And I thought, well, even though I would much prefer to tell someone else's story, I would hope that maybe by being open about this and sharing this experience, more people can understand this rather misunderstood injury and what it's like to live with what is one of those invisible injuries, so people can't really see on the outside what's going on in the inside. And I found through doing that, it's part of my healing. It's it helps my psyche a lot to be able to remind myself of my kind of previous life, who I was, use some of those skills that are still in there. What's challenging about it is that it takes quite a toll, and I do have to navigate my life so that I have built-in recovery time after I do any public speaking or awareness. But my hope is just because my story could happen so easily to anyone out there, that the more I can explain to people that even a very simple fall on the ice can be devastating, and it can and rock your whole life and cause you to lose your profession and live life very differently. And I know by my own therapy that the brain loves repetition. So I don't mind as many times as I have to say to people when we get around, especially this time of year, to just try to walk a little more consciously and cautiously. It could save you a severe injury, whether it's a brain or head injury or some other part of your body. So I'm still out here preaching to walk safely and hopefully figure out ways to navigate if you have had an injury such as mine.
And you may have already answered this, but I'll ask it again. If people could understand one thing about traumatic brain injury and recovery, what would it be?
Well, I did touch about that a little because I think one of the biggest things is the fact that it is one of those invisible injuries. It's not the only one, of course, but, I find that other than these funny glasses, and I do use a walking cane, you might not know the struggles that I have just kind of getting through life. And that even simple things such as cooking or doing the laundry, sorting socks, going through the mail, taking a shower, everyday tasks can take so much energy and brain power that it's a very different way of life. And I think what people don't understand is, although you may look and appear normal, there's always kind of a fight going on inside with your brain, trying not to drain that battery too much, because you're starting with it half charged anyway, is, you know, one way of looking at it. And so if people also could understand that, although many, many people, especially if it's a concussion, do recover well and are able to go back in the game or go back to work, there's about 15% of people who aren't going to ever fully recover. And so these are serious injuries, no matter what way you want to categorize them. And I just, I hope that people understand that and have a little more empathy for people who are struggling to, lead as normal a life as possible.
Okay. Well, you said that you have funny glasses. I would just think you're cool if I ran into you again, which also would show how invisible this is. I would just see you and say, "Oh, look how cool Kim looks." Alyssa,
My
how
Bono
common? Yeah.
look.
Alyssa Fabianic, I want to bring you into this conversation. How common is Kim's story? How often is someone's life upended by something as simple as a slip and fall on the ice or another sudden accident?
I mean, we see it, happen all the time. I'm an occupational therapist, and I've worked in many different areas, including both inpatient, outpatient, in people's homes. And Kim and I talked a little bit offline of just, how other people could relate to what she's saying about how difficult things are, like day-to-day tasks, just trying to, get through those like seemingly small things we don't think about. And they don't realize it until they're in that situation. And I guess the hard part, like Kim was saying, is it's invisible to other people unless they're transparent about it, that they're struggling. And a lot of the feeling is, well, they said it's a mild injury or is a concussion and I can go back in X amount of weeks, but they don't realize, what the long-standing effects are going to be until they're in that situation often. So that's the hard part is you're like eager to resume back to what you want and need to do, but maybe you didn't realize until you're in that moment that the cognitive load that it's going to take to participate again until you're in it. And I think if you want to compare it to anything like other than a brain injury, you will notice someone struggling if they're using, say, crutches because they broke their leg, and you'll offer and extend help to open a door to help them do this stuff. But unless that person with the brain injury is open and honest, there's no way to know and help them through their struggles getting back to everything unless they're willing and trusting to talk to you about it.
We're coming off coverage of the Olympics and the Super Bowl, and gosh knows there's been so much coverage of sports and concussions and brain injuries. Do you see many patients whose injuries were sustained in sports?
I personally do not, just like given in my settings that I'm have worked in the past. But I would say it is a hot topic, especially for children in sports. I know that they I forget what year it was exactly, but they just recently made, I want to say it's under 12, sport, like contact sports, no tackling, for football. So for I believe it's ages 12 and under. So it's interesting that they're, it's now more of a hot topic, I'd say, in the past couple years, how concussions are affecting not only children and their brain development through sports, but also for, adults in the NFL and hockey and all different types of sports. It's more, I think more, there's more of a spotlight on it, and people are noticing the long-standing effects that, Kim was starting to talk about, that, even though they're cleared to go back into that sport after so many weeks or months, that doesn't mean they're still not going to have struggles or be at high risk again for another concussion, another mild injury. So I think it's great that at least like the media and the rules for sports are starting to pay more attention to make sure we're not, putting them in a even worse spot by not noticing that even though they're cleared to go back, that they're still having trouble and that they also are at risk for even more severe damage by having repeated injuries. So
Alyssa, I wanted to
personally,
ask, yeah, I wanted to ask you,
personally,
we're talking
no,
about
but.
everything from something that happened to Kim, which is a severe traumatic brain injury, to concussions that probably most people have had at some point in their life. And I understand that there's been a rethinking, a reclassification of the way that brain injuries are talked about. Tell me about that, Alyssa. What has changed and why?
There's an interesting article that just came out from the Brain Injury Association of America, and I actually have it in front of me, so I didn't butcher the title, but it's called Better Care, Better Outcomes. A new TBI characterization system aims to improve diagnoses and treatment. And it's trying to look at the way we classify mild, moderate, and severe brain injuries. The language is changing, where I'm sure where you worth even just in the discussion of concussions, right? People are thinking, okay, that's like a temporary, I'm gonna get to go back in X amount of weeks. It's not the reality for the struggles that people are having when it's characterized as a concussion, or even in the language, brain injury language that I've been attuned to, we classify concussions as a mild traumatic brain injury. That was the initial change in language because they wanted people to recognize that it is still like on a brain injury scale. However, the article goes into detail about how, we classify it as mild, moderate, severe. However, in the case of mild brain injuries, they're seeing that the effects are even more long-standing for these people and or permanent, that classifying it as mild is doing an injustice for as far as them seeking, additional care, additional support, kind of in a way minimizing by labeling it as mild, the long-standing effects. Whereas on the other end, for more what they would say a severe brain injury classification, they're noticing that what really stood out to me, being in inpatient care, was that when they're classifying it as severe, families and caregivers and loved ones are, and even healthcare professionals are looking at it at a lens of like, there's no, like linear path to recovery. There's no, essentially that there's like no hope for that person, that
Yeah,
they're going to
so
be
it sounds
permanently
like,
this way.
yeah, so people in the past, often when they were diagnosed with a concussion, there was an expectation they'd get better and that would be it. And that's not the case at all. And then on the other end of the spectrum, if you're diagnosed with a severe brain injury, people would say, well, there's nothing that can be done. And in both cases, that's not true. Kim, you're nodding. You think this is really important.
I really do. This is music to my ears. And Alyssa and I spoke about this a little yesterday, but I recently had the opportunity, and this was a real milestone, Jen. And I wanted to mention it also just to kind of give people hope who are, going through recovery or trying to improve from their injury, that I was asked to MC an event for the Brain Injury Association of America at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., which was a real thrill for me and an honor and a stretch and very fascinating. There were, 250 people in the room, and every single person in there had some kind of connection to TBI, whether it was through their own experience or others or research or, but one of the things the guest speaker spoke about was this very topic. And I told him my story about falling on the ice and how initially I was told, I had a mild concussion, should resolve in a few days, and days turned into weeks and months and years and years and years. And he said, we just don't have the right terminology for that. And we need to change it because there's nothing mild about something that upends your life like that. And again, forces you to choose a way, choose to step away from a career that you've had, for many years. And so I think that's so important so that people don't make presumptions on either end of that scale, because I have met people on the, of the other end of things who were, told they might not have never walk again or all sorts of things, and they're doing it. And while that's not always the case, there is continuing research and funding, and I think it's always important to have hope. And it starts with acceptance, which was one of the very difficult things for me, is to accept that maybe you aren't going to be who you were, but you can be still who you are and who you're meant to be, and to, find ways to work with this in your life. But so I so agree that on either end, it's just not fair to do this, oh, that's really nothing, and oh, good luck with that one. Because as they say, if you've seen one concussion, you've seen one concussion. And I think Alyssa would probably agree that that's just true of brain injuries. And as my recovery didn't go as hoped or planned, I fell into this different category of a traumatic brain injury, not just, a recoverable concussion. So it is important how we see it, how we look at it, and that helps shape the research and the funding, which is so important. There's just not much out there. I think the NIH devotes maybe 3% of their budget to funding for traumatic brain injury research. So all of these things just help to give people hope and I think a clearer picture of what's going on.
We do need to take a quick break. We are talking about traumatic brain injury on Maine Calling. You can call us at 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing traumatic brain injuries and what to know. Joining me today, Alyssa Fabianic, who is director of the Brain Injury Program at River Ridge Center, and Kim Block, brain injury survivor and advocate. And you know her as a journalist at WGME Television. We invite you to join the conversation. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Rose Wess, who is a safety management consultant for the Mehmet Group. Thanks so much for calling in, Rose.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I understand that for Mehmet, fall prevention is a major goal. Why is that? What do the numbers here in Maine tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we really want this message to get out there because Maine actually ranks fourth in the nation for ice, sleet, and snow-related occupational injuries, which results in millions of dollars in lost wages each year. There's nearly 700 Maine workers that miss work annually due to these slip and fall incidents in the winter.
And the reason you're talking about people in terms of employees in the workplace is that's who Mehmet works with. I want to have you tell us about your campaign. It's called Walk Safe. I know Kim is working with you on that.
Yeah, so this is, we did this last year as well. I got to work with Kim on this Walk Safe campaign. And really, it's the same thing. We just want to share what we see, what our experiences have been, and that these types of injuries are preventable. And that we don't want people to go through the hardships that, can be experienced from these injuries.
What are a couple simple tips for employers and for all of us?
Yeah, so for employers, making sure that you've got a good winter weather control plan, plowing and salting and sanding and all of that. It's also making sure that, your parking lots and sidewalks are draining properly, that your gutters aren't pouring onto the sidewalk and dumping into the front entrance and things like that. And for people, it's really just taking a little bit of extra time, maintaining awareness, wearing the right shoes when you go outside, taking shorter steps. You've maybe heard the slogan, walk like a penguin. And it's really just sort of slowing down, taking small steps, and being aware of your surroundings, watching for snowy, icy patches, putting your phone away so you're not distracted, and things like that.
All right. All very common sense. But boy, all of us have moments when we are not doing that. All of us have moments when we're in a hurry and we slip or do something that's really not so prudent. Rose, thank you so much for calling in and thank you for your campaign. Kim, before we say goodbye to Rose, anything you'd like to say?
Rose, it's so good to hear from you. I am so appreciative of this partnership with Mimic and with my former station. They really do have a commitment to trying to prevent accidents, not just, provide workers' comp after they happen. They have a huge safety component in their organization, and they've, been really dedicated to this because it is. It just can't be said enough, as we said, that even though, I don't, I'm not sure everything is 100% preventable, we certainly can take steps, like Rose said, to try to eliminate the chances of having a serious fall or an injury. So, yeah, I just really appreciate Mimic's participation, and we did a recent town hall that I believe you'll have on your website, Jen, on MPBN or the station's our
We do on the main
WGME
calling.
Facebook page.
Yeah,
So yeah, so
on
on
the
the
main
main
calling
calling site.
page and on the Facebook page. Yeah. Rose, thanks so much for calling in. Rose West with the Mimic Group. We're going to go up to Vinyl Haven and Aviva. Hi, Aviva. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for this discussion. I had a skull fracture in 1979 that put me in a coma for 2 weeks. I believe that it precipitated chronic fatigue syndrome for me. But my question is, what are the most current research you can provide about the link between head injury and dementia? And if you also know anything about chronic fatigue syndrome and the link?
Alyssa, do you know the answer to Aviva's question?
What I can say is that as far as like link to further issues down the line, we are seeing more research. I will say it's probably preliminary just because, we're having medical advances, so we're like now able to like help people survive some of these injuries, whereas like before, the rate of survival may have been less. And now, with medical advances, we're able to do more research and see more into, like what kind of happens down the line. But when you think about the brain in general, I mean, it's your whole like central system, right? So any effect or injury up there is going to affect any other parts of your body, and everyone's brain is unique. So a lot of what we're seeing is obviously unique to the person and their injury, but what we are seeing is as they age, we're seeing what the long-standing effects are. I don't have a statistic off the top of my head for dementia or chronic fatigue syndrome particularly, but just in, the current research in general, it is affecting, and has the potential to affect every aspect of your body, just given the connection between the brain and every other system, whether it be your skin, your bladder. It can cause effects to any part. I wish I had a quick research fact to just pull up on those specifically, but maybe while we're having other discussions, I can pull something up to see if I have anything.
Kim?
Jen, if I could just add something to that. Ironically, I also have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, but these were diagnosed in my 20s, way before my accident. However, I was, told as I was going through my treatments, there are essentially six types of brain injuries. I used to know them by heart, but it can affect your vision, your vestibular function, your hearing, sleep, and there's a couple more. But what I was told was that if you were prone to things like car sickness beforehand, or any kind of vertigo, migraines, for instance, that those things tend to worsen when you have had a brain injury. It's almost like, the brain knows your weak spots, and And so I have had experience with that. The fatigue is a huge factor, and also just how would I explain? But just if I overwork my brain, then the other parts of my body don't function as well either. So I don't. This is anecdotal, and I'm not going to play scientist here, but that is it is common that there can be a link in how you respond to your injury based on what your kind of previous issues were.
Aviva, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck to you. Let's see, we're going to go now to Carol Starr. Carol is a brain injury survivor, an author, and speaker. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Unlike Kim, I
I'm delighted to be
understand,
here.
yeah, your brain injury is not from a fall, but from a car accident. Can you tell us briefly what happened?
Yes, I was broadsided on the driver's side by somebody going about 50 miles an hour, which resulted in my brain injury. And that was back in 1999.
1999. So it's been more than a quarter century for you. I know that you have been an organizer of support groups and a big advocate for support groups. What can a support group do for a brain injury survivor that maybe friends and family often cannot do?
I think there is a special magic that happens when brain injury survivors talk to one another because, like Kim was mentioning early on, for so many of us, this injury is invisible, that you would never know that most of us are struggling day to day. I mean, I am 26 years post, and I still live with daily brain injury symptoms. So we live with comments from people. Most of them are unintentional, like, "You look great. I wish I could nap every day. I wish I didn't have to work." And those things, especially when folks are early in their journeys, they are psychologically, emotionally devastating. So to be in a room full of people who get that, who you can say, "I get tired, I forget things, I'm confused." And every single person in that room knows that what we mean is so different than what people without brain injuries mean. Because yes, everybody gets tired, gets confused, forgets things. But when you lay brain injury on top of that, that experience is completely different than what somebody without a brain injury experiences. Even though the language we use to describe it is the same language. And when you're in a room full of people who get that, it is this feeling of being seen, of knowing that you're not alone, because so many people, they feel like they're alone in their injury, especially early on. So for folks to know that they're not alone and to learn strategies and to receive support. We all need professionals to help us to learn strategies. We need our families and friends, but we also need each other in the journey.
Carol, Maine Calling is a statewide program. So many people who are listening live in rural Maine. What's your advice for where somebody in Maine, a brain injury survivor, can find a good support group?
Know, Maine is amazing in terms of what we have for support groups. There are 26 support groups in the state of Maine. They are all over, and some of them are in person. Many of them also offer an online component. There is a statewide virtual support group. So, really, no matter where somebody is in the state, they do have access to a support group. If folks either call the Brain Injury Association Maine chapter, and their number is 1-800-444-6443, folks on the line there can tell them which support group is closest to their area. Also on the website, biausa.org, and then navigate to the Maine section, there's a list of all of the support groups in the state with information about who the leader is and how to get involved in that support group.
Great. Before we let you go, Carol, tell us about your new book.
Oh, thank you. Yes, last year I published my second book, Silver Learnings: Practical Wisdom for Living with Brain Injury. It is 25 lessons from 25 years of living with brain injury. After that quarter century mark, I realized that I wanted to do something to honor that and to help others. My first book, To Root and to Rise, was about accepting brain injury. Kim mentioned how difficult that process is. It also was for me, that book was about helping people with that. And now Silver Learnings is really looking at the whole journey and what have I learned so far that I think can help other brain injury survivors.
Well, Carol, thank you. And thank you so much for calling in. Carol Starr, an author and brain injury survivor. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about traumatic brain injuries. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our guest, Kim Block. You know Kim from all the years she was on TV in Maine. She's also a brain injury survivor and advocate. Also with us, Alyssa Fabianic with the Brain Injury Program at River Ridge Center. She is a doctor of occupational therapy. Before the break, Kim, we were talking with Carol Starr, and I know that she's been an important person to you. What would you like to emphasize from what she just said?
Well, Carol really is such a hero to the brain injury community, and she was one of the first people who reached out to me and has helped me so much understand and just listen, understand what was happening to me, but then just listen. I remember I had to do my first Zoom speech during COVID, didn't have to, was invited to for the Brain Injury Association of Maine. And she let me read it aloud to her and helped me edit it. So I'm a big fan. But one of the things she said really struck home with me, and that is how people being in a support group can be so different, because out there in the world, you know, many people don't understand that what you're going through is different. And this happens all the time when I'll say something like, oh, I left my keys in the car, or I left the groceries in the car, I forgot to bring them in. And of course, everybody wants to be empathetic. And the way we do that is to apply our own experiences to someone else's and say, oh, that happens to me all the time. But the problem, as she said, when you're speaking from a brain injury perspective, is you know it's different. It's not just a senior moment or an occasional type of thing. It's due to your brain injury. And so what somebody is intending as empathy can sometimes come off as invalidation. Mm-hmm. And that just makes the struggle a little bit harder, because you just don't really feel heard. You just need to say, oh, you're right, we have the same thing, and so I'll just stop talking now.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that you're struggling.
Yes. I'm so sorry. Or that must be frustrating. That, yeah. I know that's frustrating, you know, but I can't imagine on your level how frustrating that is. And, you know, a kinder thing to say might just be like, oh, when that happens, how does that make you feel? Or, how are you doing, by the way? Anything like that. And I don't discourage people to try to be empathetic. It's, you know, you always have to look at intent, and somebody's intent is good, but that is a struggle for patients who often do feel misunderstood.
I have an email here from Lynn. I hit my head on the ice in January and experienced a concussion. I had no symptoms other than short-term head pain when I moved my head. A CT scan showed no issues. I subsequently developed 2 small subdural hematomas over the next month, probably because I continued my usual gym schedule, even though I still exhibited absolutely no symptoms. It seems like it would be good to have a concussion fact sheet after this type of injury, so folks have a clear picture of what they not to do in the aftermath of this kind of injury and why. So, Kim, I bet you would agree with Lynn.
I would, and I'm sure Alyssa would too. And my advice when I was in the emergency room was, if things don't improve for you in a week, then please get back in touch with us and we'll refer you to a specialist. I did have major symptoms, so it is frustrating when you aren't really feeling it, but I think everybody who takes a nasty fall on their head should be followed. And when we did our Walk Safe program last year, I got a letter from someone who said she had fallen, but she had not really followed up on anything, but she saw our PSA and it eventually caused her to think she should see a doctor. And she had 2 brain bleeds and likely would not have survived. And so she was grateful just for the kind of impetus to go get yourself checked out. But it is frustrating because those brain bleeds often don't have symptoms until it's too late. So, but there are there are checklists. I'm sure Lisa would tell you there are things to avoid. And, you know, there's all sorts of treatment and therapies out there for people.
I'm going to go to Jill calling from Bath. Hi, Jill. Go ahead.
Hi there, Jennifer. I think I missed a little bit of the chronic fatigue, but I suffered 10 years of domestic violence. And I basically was being lambasted on the side of my head onto the floor. And that was many years ago, but I've been sick with autoimmune so I've been sick for 15 years. And I've had a few car accidents, which I broke my collarbone, and not one doctor looks at any of this as anything. And I mean, now at the point where I'm in bed 99% of the time, I'm out of it. But I think, what happens to people with domestic violence when they get beaten and beaten? There's not a doctor that looks at you seriously.
Yeah, Jill, I'm so sorry to hear your story. And I'm going to read an email from somebody who just wrote in named Eric, who is a doctor. He writes, I'm a retired physician who worked with a head trauma team and was involved in domestic violence screening and treatment. Many women who experienced domestic violence were hit in the head or thrown against objects causing head trauma with repeated blows in succession caused much worse injury than any one blow in itself would cause. Strangulation is a multiplier regarding the head trauma. Looking normal, this brain tissue with its cognitive sequelae is crazy making for the victim, who will have trouble problem solving and doing daily activities, e.g. caring for the kids. Post-concussion depression is common, and stress is detriment for recovery. This issue, and this confirms what you're saying, Jill, this issue is frequently missed by medical providers who don't screen for this and try to treat with anti-anxiety or antidepressant meds that won't work. So thank you, Eric, for writing in with that. Alyssa, is there anything you would like to add to that?
Yeah, this has been like a big topic in the brain injury community as well. And I think it goes to say, like, it's hard to know to advocate for yourself in the moment of what you need, because you're focused on survival in that situation. You're not thinking about necessarily the injuries you sustained. And it's especially important for those survivors of domestic violence to be, able to have the tools to advocate for themselves. And I think the hard part is we're focused. It's hard because we do want to focus on mental health and helping in that capacity. But I think we see time and time again, especially for women in the healthcare system, that their problems are being minimized to, you're just stressed, it's situational, it's mental health related, and then we're seeing down the line that these women, trusting their instincts and thinking that there's something wrong, are having other health issues that weren't detected because their concerns weren't taken seriously or labeled as like a psychosocial or like a mental health issue. So all of that just to say is the importance of providing them the tools to advocate for themselves, to get those scans, to get the treatment that they need, to make sure that like all of those bases are being covered, not only in brain injury, but, in other areas as well. I think just to go back to what the caller was mentioning about her situation is, again, just having like more of the tools to advocate for yourself. And I think even initially when you're looking at, they're going to do a standard CT scan in some of these situations, in any of these situations, it might not pick up on everything, or it might not show something right away, but just trusting your gut and knowing to advocate for yourself and go back and get repeat imaging, kind of advocate for yourself, I think is the big piece there. It's important. There is a lot of domestic violence support In Maine, one that comes to mind is Safe Haven. They did a talk at the Brain Injury Conference a couple years ago in Maine, but they are starting to focus more on the research for those two topics, specifically of brain injury and domestic violence.
Jill, I wish you the best. Thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Alicia, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Alicia, go ahead.
Hi there. My question is about concussion care. So after a fall and an initial visit to a walk-in or an urgent care clinic, what should the next step be? I've heard about concussion care centers. I'm not sure how that differs from seeing a neurologist. When might each be appropriate? And then also timing. It gets really hard to get in to see a specialist. And so how time sensitive are treatment protocols to have proper healing?
Elisa?
I, for the concussion clinics, it's hard because I don't think the standard of care is. I feel like, I mean, I'm just speaking from even my sister who just got a concussion. I don't even think they did any follow-up besides saying, you have, we did a scan, you have a concussion. Take it easy, like we'll give you a note, stay out of work for X amount of time. I think the follow-up care is lacking in many ways. Again, I think it's twofold. We have to like advocate for ourselves, but also the medical system needs to also have those resources on hand to give to people. And I just see that that is an area that's lacking. Specifically with like concussions or, what they quote as like a mild brain injury. Like if you're not in a death-defying situation, they're, like, okay, yeah, we do see it. We confirmed it for you. And then it doesn't feel like there's usually a follow-up in place. I'm not quite sure on the specifics of if there's any like current places that are good about that. It sounds like when the caller was talking about it that they made some reference to some of these clinics, but I don't know if they often the quickest way to get in anywhere is to have a referral from that person that is diagnosing you. So again, just like knowing those resources and asking for them, I think is
Yeah.
the best next step.
Alicia, thank you for your call. It sounds to
Oh,
me,
it sounds to
Alyssa, like some good advice for everybody is to, if you have that feeling, you know yourself, you know your body, if you feel as though you're not getting the care you need, perhaps contact the Brain Injury Association for some support and some guidance. And we will put that information in the Maine Calling newsletter. Let's see, we're almost out of time, but I want to get in as many calls as possible. Go to Ida in South Portland. Ida, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Hi, I am a brain injury survivor and I'm also a mental health provider. In 2018, I fainted and hit my head on the bathroom sink. And one of the things that I found in my journey is that when you have a brain injury, you have a lot of symptoms, and the symptoms that seem to be the loudest are the ones that are attended to first, whether it's pain, whether it's dizziness. So you may go to PT and OT and vision therapy and audio therapy, and I did all of that. But one of the things that was not addressed was emotion regulation and grieving. And I am a therapist, and in the middle of it, you don't know. And mental and other providers, if they had said, you should see a therapist because you can't even say the word brain injury without crying. So what we've been doing, I own Art of Awareness. It's a mental health practice in South Portland, Maine. We're creating some support labs where people can come and they can practice with other people who have dysregulated nervous systems, practice regulating those nervous systems, practice regulating the emotions, get support to grieve the loss of what's happened for you. And that's not to say, oh, it's all in your head, go see a mental health provider. It's because the brain impacts the nervous system, and the nervous system is impacted by all the sensory systems that come to you, not just your five senses, but vestibular, your interoception, your proprioception. And if those are off and many of them are overstimulated or understimulated with a brain injury, it impacts your emotions. And if you can't regulate your emotions, it's even harder to...
Ida, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for the work that you do. Unfortunately, we're pretty much out of time, but I appreciate that. And I know that Kim and Alyssa, you probably both very much agree with Ida that this is... Yeah, I see some nodding going on, that this is a really important part of the conversation. Too bad we don't have more than an hour. I want to tell you how much I appreciate both of you for coming on to Main Calling today. Kim Block, a brain injury survivor advocate, and of course you know her from her work as a journalist on television, and Alyssa Fabianic, director of the Brain Injury Program at River Ridge Center. Our sound engineer today was Jane Donahue. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about women working in the trades in Maine. It's up a little, but not enough. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.